Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
D Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in senior NFL writer for ESPN.com, Bill Barnwell. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for joining us. So yesterday, Bill, we actually played a clip from a recent episode of your podcast where Mina Kimes predicted that Cam Ward will become the most divisive quarterback in football this season. And as you might imagine, Ward is already pretty damn divisive here in Nashville. Two questions for you, Bill. Do you anticipate the Cam Ward debate to break more into the mainstream NFL conversation this season? And where do you stand on Ward overall?
Yeah, so the first answer is yes, because I think Tennessee is just going to be more relevant in 2026. You know, I think from a national perspective, with any team where they're struggling, they fire their coach, they're not competitive as the year goes on. You just don't see that team very often. People who have to watch or choose to watch everyone every week, myself included, Mina included, you know, you watch Tennessee and certainly you see, you see more of them than maybe other people who are covering a team or fans who are just watching their own team or they're the best teams in football. What do I think of Cam Ward? I'm optimistic. You know, I really think watching him play last year, number one, the offensive infrastructure just was not there. I mean, they couldn't run basic concepts well. I remember looking at a couple of bubble screens, for example, where it's easy completion. You know, it's built into the offense to make the quarterback life easier, and they just couldn't block them. You know, the wide receivers just could not block with a 3-on-2 advantage. And so guys are getting blown up because there was not the physicality they needed to run simple concepts. I thought Cam got to the right answers a lot of the time. I thought he was creative. He created out of structure. His throws were accurate. He had hiccups here and there. Certainly, it wasn't like he was a perfect quarterback by any means. The numbers are the numbers. But from what I saw with the numbers versus what I saw with my eyes, I really like Cam Ward a lot more, taking a closer look. And I think a lot of the issues with Tennessee last year were not necessarily Cam Ward's fault.
Along those lines, Bill, Titans fans are hoping that Ward has the same kind of year two breakout as Drake May and Caleb Williams.
Sure.
Ward now has Brian Daboll overseeing his development. But as you noted in a recent piece on ESPN.com, the Titans' collection of playmakers is not particularly impressive, even with the additions of Carnell Tate and Wandale Robinson at wide receiver. How confident are you that Ward can take a big step forward this season?
I'm pretty confident because even though I don't think Tennessee is like the best set of playmakers in football, I still think they're a lot better than what they had at receiver last year. I mean, it is definitely significantly improved. Just having competent players at receiver, let alone someone with the upside of Carnell Tate, is a major step in the right direction. I might sit here and say, well, you know, Wandale Robinson, for a guy who was really, for most of his career in New York, a gadget player, $16, $17 million a year, that's probably too much for what I want to do. He's still not a bad player by any means. So I think in the big picture, I worry about maybe the opportunity to get that number one, unless Carnell Tate turns out to be that guy. But I do think there's just a lot more competence throughout the receiving core. Like I said, I brought up the bubble screens a second ago. Having concepts like that just blocked appropriately, it's just an easy button for a quarterback to say, okay, you know what? I can get these 6-7 yards, not have to worry about it, get to the next play, not be stuck in third and long. When that stuff's not working, you have nothing to fall back on. And so just having, throughout the lineup, competency is going to make Cam Ward take a big step forward. Now, I think he has the upside to be really good. I don't know if the pieces around him, especially at tackle right now, are up to those expectations. But I do think there's like, you know, there's certainly the potential that he has a massive leap in year two. I just think it really comes down to, you know, can he function within the structure of the offense? And is the offense giving him enough answers to kind of do the things he needs to do?
We talk with Bill Barnwell, senior NFL writer for ESPN.com. Now, Bill, with that being said, do you think, based on Daboll's history with other quarterbacks, do you think this offense will allow Cam to continue to grow? Because I thought last year's offense asked him to do a little bit too much too soon.
I agree with you. And I think it's because they didn't have the pieces to do anything else. You know, when you can't run basic bubble screens, when you have to rely pretty heavily on RPOs because you don't trust your left tackle to pass protect, you know, when you don't have receivers who are going to win against man coverage consistently, you don't really have a lot of answers. Like, there's not many plays you can call when just the other team is better dudes than you. And so it was on Cam Ward to create a structure. And I think there is the pieces there to succeed within the structure of the offense. And I saw this. You know, I grew up as a Giants fan. I lived in the New York area. And I watched that offense with Brian Daboll and Daniel Jones that first season really improve dramatically. And it wasn't because they had great players. It wasn't because they, you know, had some outside of Saquon Barkley, had that great players. But they did a really good job of skiing stuff up that worked for Daniel Jones. He took too many sacks. He fumbled too often. So they got the ball out quick. It was very quickly RPOs. It was quick game. It was running the ball effectively with Saquon Barkley. It was, what can we do to minimize his weaknesses and maybe play up his strengths? And I think that's what good coordinators, good coaches do. And so I'm hoping that's what we see for Cam Ward here in 2026 with Brian Daboll. It's not necessarily, you know, opening up this dramatic playbook you never had access to, but just, what does Cam do well? How can we maximize those opportunities? What can we do to make his life easier? Take some of the problems off the plate for him. And then once he develops and feels confident, then maybe open stuff up a little bit more.
Now, Bill, I read your article describing how to build a Super Bowl level roster by each position. And one position in particular, obviously, because I played the position, wide receiver, and you talked about the number two guy. We see everyone trying to look for two number ones. I mean, you look in Cincinnati, they have their two number ones. Dallas pretty much have their two number ones, and there may be another team in there. But typically, you look at some of these other teams, it's, yeah, we have our number one, but we also have a capable number two. He's not going to supersede what the number one does, but he's getting paid as if he's a number one guy. Are we shift? Are teams shifting more to not having number one guys and just having a bona fide number one and then a number two? Because Seattle fits the mold because Jaxon Smith-Njigba was the number one and Cooper Kupp was the number two, and he barely had 500 yards.
Yeah, you're right. And I'll tell you what, I think when you get past that number one guy, which obviously you were for a significant portion of your career, you know, when you have that number one, yes, you want him to do everything. Once you get past number one in the NFL with wide receivers making so much money these days, I think you're looking more for kind of archetypes. You're looking for roles. You're not looking for, okay, a guy who can step in and be the number one. But like with Cooper Kupp, he's not the guy he was 5 or 6 years ago. He's not going to run away from man coverage all the time. But, man, he's a good blocker. He's a sound player. He's decent after the catch. Rashid Shaheed, same thing. Different kind of player. No, he's not going to be your full-on, you know, get 12 targets a game guy. But he's quick. He's a great returner. He is very effective, you know, working downfield. He's not going to have crazy games, but he might have a 50-yard catch in a game that makes a difference. And he did last year. So I think that's what you're looking for once you get past that number one guy is, yes, you'd love to have a T. Higgins, love to have a Devontae Smith as your number two. Once you get past that number one guy, you're trying to find players who fit the context of your offense. Robinson's a good example. Robinson's not going to be, you know, a 12, 15 target downfield a game guy, but can he be a useful player within the context of the offense? Yeah, I think he can be.
Bill Barnwell is with us. And just to kind of take it a step further with Robinson, Bill, I feel like with the Titans, like we were just talking about Peter Skoronski, they intend to sign him to a second contract, but they've had so few guys that they have drafted in the last 5, 6 years that have warranted the second contract. They're still trying to make it happen with guys like Robinson, who they have to perennially overpay in the free agent market. So based on what they're paying him and the expectation level sometimes that goes with getting that big price tag, what should Titans fans expect from him?
I think you're expecting a guy who just gives some easy answers for him in the offense. It's okay, we have the numbers to throw a bubble screen. We have the numbers to throw a quick game here. We have the numbers to throw an RPO to the side of the field. And we have, you know, an opportunity to get the ball out quick, avoid a sack, avoid putting your tackles in a tough situation, and then trust Robinson to make plays after the catch. I think that's where he's going to make an impact. And that's a valuable player. It's just maybe not a $17 million a year player. In a dream world, you're finding that guy in the second, third, fourth round of the draft where, okay, now we have that guy and he's making $2 million or $1.5 million. Like you said, when you don't nail your picks, well, now you're paying $15, $17 million a year for those guys. And that's the tough part in rebuilding. But obviously, you know, it's better to have better pieces around your quarterback than just say, okay, we're going to draft guys and be cheap and not do anything. We saw that last year, and the offense didn't work as a result. So it's a tough spot. But I do think in the long run, Robinson is going to be a useful player for Tennessee, even if necessarily you'd not want to spend that much money in free agency if you didn't have to.
Do you have a theory on the sequence? All of your study on the positions and where they come from for a Super Bowl winner. The Titans, as you've mentioned, we've just sort of laid the groundwork. They're kind of starting from scratch. They're still trying to get out of that cycle of having to fill holes by overpaying free agents. They need to string some drafts together. But, for example, hiring the defensive coach in Saleh, what's the best way to build a Super Bowl roster when we're basically starting from scratch?
Yeah, I think you're looking at what can we find typically in free agency, what can we find in the late rounds of the draft, and what do we need to get when it comes to the very beginning of the draft? What has to be our core pieces, the things that we need to make a priority? And in the NFL, typically that's quarterback, which they drafted with the first overall pick. It's edge rusher, which they're trying to catch up with some of their trades and their free agent signings. And it's defensive tackle. And the good thing is they already have a defensive tackle who's a stud, one of their actual successful picks, Jeffrey Simmons, who's one of the best players in all of football and obviously going to be around, thankfully, for a long time. The other spot is left tackle. And left tackle is a tough spot because, of course, they didn't have a solution there. I mean, the Taylor Lewan days ended, and then they've kind of struggled to find solutions since. They have run through guys like Andre Diller. They drafted guys at right tackle, didn't work out. And now you sign Dan Moore because you need somebody, and Dan Moore has not, unfortunately, not lived up to expectations so far in his first year. So I think you're sort of saying, okay, if we're going to think, which Tennessee is probably going to be more likely to be a bottom five team than a top five team this year, let's get the guys in the positions that we know it's going to be hard to find in free agency, hard to find via trade, hard to find in the later rounds of the draft. You get those guys, you can find cornerbacks, you can find off-ball linebackers, you can find guards in free agency. So Skronsky, at the end of the day, is a good player, and you need good players in this team, so I don't fault them for signing into an extension. But it's about figuring out the big picture of not only, you know, who's the best player, but also what are our chances to get this guy versus can we get a guy at the same position later on or day two, day three of the draft?
Bill, we with Sam Darnold winning the Super Bowl, and again with Saleh coming in and really wanting to set the tone with his type of defense, do you think there's more hope than maybe there was 10 years ago of winning a Super Bowl if you don't have Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady quarterbacking? Is maybe the cycle now, the atmosphere better than it maybe was before when there was that perception that you had to have that superstar QB?
Yeah, it's the beauty of football, right? The cycle is the perfect word. I think back to 2000, 2001 with those Ravens teams where Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl and Tony Banks was there. The Bucks where Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl. You know, those guys were not great quarterbacks. They were okay quarterbacks who filled in the right spots and were useful players. I hate to bring this up, but the Rams Super Bowl where they beat Tennessee, where it was a third string quarterback in Kurt Warner who came out of nowhere and won a Super Bowl. You know, I do think we're seeing kind of the cycles of football, right? Like 5 years ago, it was everyone wanted to throw the football. Now we're seeing teams play light boxes on defense, kind of play more nickel. And so two deep safeties make sense to run the football. We're seeing teams run the football more often, more effectively. That makes running backs more valuable. I think you can't really prevent change in football. You kind of have to just to adapt and deal with the cycles of it. And so if you can build a great defense in the NFL, and Seahawks did, and they had an offense that wasn't bad, it was good, and Sam Darnold had his rough games, but also had great stretches of football and played well when he needed to, you can still win a Super Bowl that way. You know, at the end of the day, yes, no matter what era of football we're in, you'd rather have a Patrick Mahomes or a John Elway or a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady. You're always going to be better with those guys. But if you don't have those guys, you can absolutely win without one of those guys, and we saw that this past season.
Another theme that you correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, that when following you for a long time and the number system that you guys use, the DVOA and things like that, the theory has been it's hard to have the great defense every year, but you can put together a great defense for a year or two. And so we're all curious, you know, can Saleh overhaul the defense with Jeffrey Simmons at the middle and some of the moves they made and have it be significantly better? What's the ceiling maybe for this Titans defense this year, even though the roster individually doesn't impress you?
I still think it's top half of the league. And, you know, they've made a lot of good moves. I really think Cordell Flott and Alante Taylor are two very good cornerbacks. Jermaine Johnson, you know, really flashed before his injury. Maybe he's a year removed from that. He's a little better. I think John Franklin Myers is a super underrated player. I'm glad he got paid. He was consistently impactful in Denver. there's a lot of talented pieces here. Now, I would say maybe compared to other teams, I don't have the depth that you would like from other teams. I think if, you know, if one of the cornerbacks get hurt, if Simmons gets hurt again and misses a couple weeks, you're really going to feel that because there's just not those secondary, tertiary pieces. But I'll tell you what, the thing about Robert Saleh, and he did this in New York with the Jets. He did it in San Francisco. He is really good at developing players. There's a lot of guys who either were not notable players, John Franklin Myers being one of them, or players who, you know, were drafted in the little rounds or signed a free agency for modest deals. Robert Saleh got the most out of them. He did not have great pieces in San Francisco last year because of all the injuries. They were still a playoff team. They still survived on defense because Saleh is really good at coaching up players. And so I think you're looking at someone like a Cedric Gray or an Anthony Hill or a Cody Barton at linebacker or a Femi Oladeyo at edge rusher, where right now you'd say, okay, those guys are not necessarily going to be superstars. We don't know necessarily, but I think seeing Saleh maybe take them to the next level would be kind of the thing you'd hope for, where, you know, you're having a guy who doesn't necessarily have superstars, but he can turn okay players into good players and good players into really good players.
Bill Barnwell has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Of course, you can read all of his work at ESPN.com. Bill, thank you so much for your time. We hope to do this again soon.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Have a good one.
615-737-1025. We'll react to what Bill Barnwell had to say. You can as well. 615-737-1025. This Sunday, 1025 The Game will have live coverage of the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix race at the Nashville Super Speedway. Coverage begins at 5 p.m. and is brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, and Big Shots in downtown Nashville.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.